This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Happy holidays, everyone. Michelle, Chris, and I are wishing you a safe and happy holiday season, and we're all hoping that 2022 will bring for you a safe and prosperous new year. So we thought that with all the changes that have gone on this year, perhaps it would be maybe fitting, a little nostalgic, to talk about Walt Disney World and how it came to celebrate the holiday season. Especially for this talk, we will be focusing on the Osborne family spectacle of Dancing Lights. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever visited a Disney resort during the month of December? Or the holiday season, I guess we'll say the holiday season. I'll tell you why. It's really interesting. Regardless of whether you go to Disneyland, Walt Disney World, or any place in the world, Disneyland, Paris, you name it. Regardless of how many times you have been to any one of those resorts, the very first time that you go during Christmas, I'm telling you, it's going to feel like it's your very first time. So if you go, let's say, between Thanksgiving and New Year's, you're going to witness some very interesting sights and sounds that will really, really bring the Christmas spirit to you. But again, it's also going to make you feel like, wow, I've been here before, but it seems so different. Your first visit during the holiday season will turn out to be a very extraordinary one. I know that I had gone to Walt Disney World dozens of times before I finally got around to going in December. And I can tell you that December day, evening, the first day and night that I was down there, it was extraordinary. I had enjoyed Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party, all the things that came with that, the parade, the shows, the snow in Main Street, USA, the special fireworks, and of course, as we all know, that $65 cookie. Then I had gone to Epcot, seen Holidays Around the World and World Showcase. There were all the Christmas storytellers in all the countries, but the big deal was, there were two big deals, really. Three big deals. First, the Candlelight Processional, a huge stage across from the American Adventure, filled with carolers, supported by my beloved Voices of Liberty and the orchestra, which all together partnered to deliver a concert I never would forget. I've been able to see it several times. Of course, that was one thing. And then, of course, we get to see Illuminations and the Christmas tag. Back then, when you moved from the Future World area of Epcot to World Showcase, you crossed over the bridge and there was this huge trestle. And a lot of people call that the Lights of Winter. But I think the Lights of Winter was that little garden area that was between that trestle and Spaceship Earth, where they had like these little snowflake things standing up. But everybody thinks of the trestle as the Lights of Winter. This trestle had, it was a huge trestle. It spanned that whole like bridge, and it had synchronized lights. And the first time I saw it, I was just awestruck. There was music being played, and I can tell you that was the day that I heard, while I was watching the lights, David Foster's Carol of the Bells. And every time I hear that song, I think of that trestle and the dancing lights. If you get a chance to see that trestle on YouTube, you definitely, definitely want to do so. Just type in Lights of Winter and I'm sure you'll see several videos. Of course, it doesn't compare with being there live, but it gives you an idea as to what kind of an impact it would have on anybody just standing there live watching the lights and listening to the music. Of course, then there was Illuminations. And after Illuminations, they would present a Christmas tag. And there were fountains and music, and we heard a chorus of children singing, Let There Be Peace on Earth. And oh my God, it really does a job on you. And then you hear the narration by the late Walter Cronkite. I have had the privilege of watching that with many, many special friends over the years. And to this day, I just think about that and I remember very, very warmly how beautiful that was and how that meant so much to me during the Christmas season to be able to witness that and enjoy that with all of my friends. That brings us to MGM Studios, and this is where our story really begins. This was not started by a mouse, but it was started by a man by the name of William Jennings Bryan Osborne Jr. This guy was born on September 21st, 1943, in a little town called Fort Smith, which was in Sebastian County, Arkansas. He graduated from the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, and he graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree in business, and he also minored in biology. Osborne worked for a number of hospitals, and included were the St. Edward's Hospital in Fort Smith and St. Vincent's in Little Rock, Arkansas. In 1968, he and his wife Mitzi together founded the Arkansas Research Medical Testing Center, which was located in Little Rock. And this company specialized in conducting clinical drug trials for the Federal Drug Administration approval. They had a pretty good business, and it took off very, very fast and became very successful. And the fortune that they were able to amass gave them the opportunity to purchase this huge estate in 1976 in the middle of town. In 1980, they had a daughter. Her name was Allison Breanne Osborne. And if you have heard the Osborne story before, you would know that her nickname was Breezy. So she was born in 1980. Well, in 1986, she seemed a little depressed. And her father was walking one day with her, and he was asking her, you know, what's going on? I don't know, Dad. Nothing really seems to really make me happy. And they started talking about Christmas, and she said, you know, Dad, can we decorate our house with a lot of lights for Christmas? So, wanting to please his daughter, and just like any other father would do, he started stringing lights around their house. But not 100, not 200, not 300. He started off with 1,000 lights. That's a lot. And as the years passed on, he added more and more lights. And of course, you know, if you only have so much space, you're going to run out of space for the lights. So what would you do? Remember, he's very wealthy. So he purchased the properties to the property to the left of the house, and he purchased the property to the right of the house. And now he had plenty of space. So the light displays grew and grew and grew. And as the years went on, by 1993, which was just 7 years after he started, he was now featuring approximately 3 million lights, and maybe even a little, and maybe some more. A couple of the displays that he brought to his Christmas celebration of lights, you may have seen in Walt Disney World and MGM Studios, or Disney's Hollywood Studios now. There was an illuminated globe. There were the angels with the wings moving. They had the rotating carousels. I'm sure you've seen those on top of the buildings in the streets of America. There was a huge, he had large Christmas trees. One of them was 70 feet tall. He also had a canopy of lights, and there was a side street in the studios where you remember walking underneath this canopy of light. So all those eventually did make it to Walt Disney World, but we're getting ahead of the story. So let's get back to right around 93 or so. And, you know, in that town, word got, you know, he became very famous for his Christmas displays. People would come around. Oh, it was very, very popular. You know, just like you would drive around your neighborhood around Christmas to look at how people decorated their properties. So they became very popular. The displays became very popular in Arkansas. And actually, they became popular around the world. News crews would come to film, and of course, all you need to do is put something on television, and boom, word gets out, and everybody and his brother would go to visit the Osborne Christmas displays. Well, that gave way to a problem, because the property that they owned was located on one of the busiest streets in Little Rock, Arkansas. So all that attention with all that traffic caused some severe traffic issues, and with that came the complaints. The display was normally lit for 35 days during the Christmas season, and they turned on the lights from sunset until midnight. So with all the stuff going on, his neighbors filed a lawsuit, and the lawsuit claimed that there was traffic congestion, and it made traveling on those on the streets around there very difficult, and simple trips to, let's say, the corner store that would usually take 5 or 10 minutes was taking like hours to do. But the big argument was that the traffic congestion would cause issues with emergency vehicles, which could not get down the street. So here's the lawsuit, and William Jennings Osborne was not happy with it, and while it was going on, he started adding more lights. He added three million more lights to his display. Well, the county court ordered an injunction against the display, and that injunction said you can put the display up for only 15 days, and you can light the display only from 7 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. So, you know, Osborne didn't like this at all, so he appealed to the Arkansas Supreme Court, and he lost. Then in 1994, he appealed to the United States Supreme Court. Justice Clarence Thomas shot down Osborne's claim that his religious freedom was being violated. So, guess what? The appeal did not go through, and it got even bad in 1995. The Arkansas State Supreme Court ordered the display to completely shut down. So that was a big blow, 1995. So how do we get from Arkansas to Orlando? So the thing is that, as you can imagine, the court case became very, very famous, very popular, and it captured national attention. And there were cities that were calling William Jennings Osborne and saying, hey, we'd love to host your display. He had many, many invitations. And then the Walt Disney Company came a-calling. And that was in the form of John Phelan, who at the time was a project director for Walt Disney World. He contacted the Osborne's attorney to discuss the possibility of moving the display to Orlando. So the attorney put Phelan direct contact with William Jennings Osborne, and they talked about the Disney Company talked about how they would love to have his display in Walt Disney World and where they would put it, and they talked about it and they talked about it, and they had mentioned that they wanted to put the display, they had a home for it, it was going to be on Residential Street, which was a backlot section of the Disney MGM Studios theme park. But what's funny is that Osborne thought they meant a residential street in Orlando, but it really wasn't. It was the residential street section on that back lot. It was about 700 feet of houses, and they would use that for the framework for the decorations. It did extend, I think they called those, they didn't call it Streets of America back then, I think they called it the New York Street, and that would extend a little bit into that area. If you remember Residential Street, they had houses there. I mean, they used that area for commercial. They used commercials and television shows and movies. But the two buildings that everyone remembers was the one that was used for Empty Nest and the one that was used for Golden Girls. So they talked and talked and talked, and Osborne, who was a fan of Walt Disney and Walt Disney World, said, I would love to do it. So in 1995, the display was brought and set up on Residential Street, and it was introduced as the Osborne Family Festival of Lights, and it was pretty popular. The thing was that it was at night, and they, instead of bringing the guests on the trams like they did during the day when they did the tours. They would let the guests off at the beginning of the residential street and they would walk down the street. It became very, very popular. But as we all know, Disney never really likes to be complacent, and they started to plan to do things with that display. They did have the original lights from the Osborne Estate, but they wanted to build upon this display every year. Pretty soon, the numbers started climbing. 3 million, 4 million, 5 million lights. And there were times when, if those of you who may remember, they actually added some hidden Mickeys to the lights. At one point, they had, I don't know, but I think it was between 40 and 50 hidden Mickeys, at least right around 2007. And the numbers that were popping up to describe what Disney had to do to put up these lights is just amazing. 10 miles of rope lighting, 30 miles of extension cords, 2 million ties used to hold together the extension cords and the lights. One time there was something written and it claimed that it took 20,000 man hours to install the display each holiday season. And that started in August and early September. The lights were usually turned on in mid-November, and they ran through the first week in January. And let me just step aside. I wanted to tell everyone, you may or may not have heard a podcast by the name of WDW Today, in which at one episode, the show director for the Osborne Lights was brought in. And it was on that podcast that the director said that after the season, they actually tossed all the lights away. They tossed them, and they would purchase brand new lights the following year. They just felt that it would take too much time to take them off very carefully, check all the lights, categorize them, put them someplace where they could store them for the year. So at the end of every year, they trashed the lights, and they started off with a brand new set. Thought that was a very interesting piece of information. The year of 2004 was when they started building the Lights Motor Action Extreme Stunt Show attraction. And guess what? That was going to swallow up part of Residential Street. So things had to change. The Osborne Lights needed a new home. So they moved it to the New York Street set, which eventually was going to be called the Streets of America. The move to the New York set really, really helped the show directors. It gave them more space for lights. It also allowed them to use snow machines on the rooftops and do a few other things that they really were not able to do on Residential Street. I could talk about sponsorships. It went from Sylvania to Siemens. And actually, at that point, I think it was in 2005, Sylvania became the sponsor. They also had a sponsorship deal with the Spaceship Earth and Illuminations. So they kind of wanted to be involved in those nighttime spectaculars. In 2006, the display was renamed. It was now being called the Osborne Family Spectacle of Dancing Lights. And that was because they added 1,500 dimmer switches that allowed the lights to, quote, dance to various Christmas and holiday songs. And I'll mention some of these songs later on in this discussion. So whenever a song was played, the lights would dance to the music. So they actually choreographed the lights with the song. And after that particular song and dance, the lights would remain steady for about 7 minutes. And then they would do another dance with another song. They also had these live segments where you had a fictional radio station with two people. I think the names were Arnie and Ann. And they also, you could hear a voice from one of the Disney characters. The whole show cycled every 40 to 60 minutes. So if you missed it, if you missed any part of the show, all you had to do was wait a little bit less than an hour and you could see it start all over again. The tweaking kept on going every year, adding things like colors and different displays. It was really, really, really something. And it continued. And then 2011 was a significant year. That year, William Jennings Osborne passed away. I don't remember what he passed away from, but at one point in his lifetime, he actually was worth around $50 million. But when he died, the estate was just swallowed up in debt. And within a few years, his widow, Mitzi, had to declare bankruptcy. It was sad when you think about it. But that year, all the lights were swapped out, and they brought in LED lights for everything. And they also installed a new lighting system. So basically, that whole show, that whole display was upgraded. And with that, one of the directors wanted to do something for a long time, and they wanted to upgrade the canopy. So in the past, the canopy was basically red, all red. But now, with the LEDs, that allowed each light to have controllable red, green, and blue LEDs, which allowed the engineers to play with the lighting of the canopy and give it sort of a, I guess you'd call it a video touch. They had, just on that canopy, 22,000 pixels, 16 million colors. So they really had a lot of fun with that. Let's see. Moving on to 2013, sponsorship changed. Now it was Siemens. Let's see. 2014, when I was doing my research on this, I don't recall coming across this, but in 2014, I found out that they had something called a Frozen Holiday Premium Package. Now I remember. So if you remember the Streets of America, towards the back, to the right of where Lights, Motor, Action Stunt Show was held, there was a building where the restrooms were. In front of their restrooms, they had quartered off a large area with tables and everything, and this was to allow people to take part of the, quote, Frozen Holiday Premium Package. So you could sit down, special viewing, and you could watch the lights. Apparently, this was themed after a movie called Frozen. Have you ever heard of it? So that was 2014. But 2015 came, and that was going to be the final season. They announced in September 15, 2015, that the holiday season for 2015 would be the last one for the Osborne Lights. Why? Because the entire Streets of America section was to be removed to prepare for something called Galaxy's Edge. So the final performance was scheduled for January 3rd, 2016. But on January 3rd of 2016, they announced they were going to go another three more nights for the lights. It was just so popular. I had mentioned earlier that there were songs that were synchronized with the lights. And over the last performance, or the last year of the performance for the Osborne Spectacle of Dancing Lights, Osborne Family Spectacle of Dancing Lights, here are the songs that were played. And so you can imagine, every time I hear any of these songs, I think of the Osbornes. Of course, there was Christmas Eve, Sarajevo, 1224 by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Everybody knows that one. Jingle Bells by Barbara Streisand. Another Trans-Siberian Orchestra piece called The Mad Russian's Christmas. Feliz Navidad by Jose Feliciano. An Elvis Presley version of Here Comes Santa Claus. Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops with Parade of the Wooden Soldiers. This one, I'm not sure if I'd recognize this one. It's called Nothing for Christmas by the Plain White Tees. That was from the Prep and Landing Naughty versus Nice special. Let's see. Big one that Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean loves is Christmas is Starting Now by Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. And that's from the Phineas and Ferb Christmas Vacation special. There is also a rendition of Winter Wonderland. And then, of course, the final is What's This by Danny Elfman from The Nightmare Before Christmas. On the final performance, and you can see this in YouTube if you can find it, final performance, which was on January 6, 2016, the final songs the lights danced to was, they were Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and Mickey Mouse Club Alma Mater. That was January 6th, 2016, and the streets of America eventually closed to guests on April 2nd, 2016. Now, where are the Osborne lights today? Well, the Walt Disney World Company donated pretty much most of the lights to the Give Kids the World Village for their Night of a Million Lights event. They use that event to raise money for the village, and the village hosts the wishes and guests of families of very sick children. But this story illustrates how, you know, it's funny, a simple gesture by a dad, by a father, one person, and how it impacts millions for generations. His William Jennings Osborne's desire to bring a smile to his daughter Breezy at Christmas time, that has evolved into bringing smiles to many children over the years during Christmas time, including yours truly. So the next time you happen to be in front of your computer or laptop and you want a little Christmas spirit, you may want to go over to YouTube and type in Osborne Family Spectacle of Dancing Lights and go back in time and see how special that was. It'll always be special to me, and I'm sure that there are many of you out there who will also agree that we may never see anything like that again. So for my co-hosts, Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean and Chris Saliopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying, happy holidays, everybody. Stay safe. We'll see you on the road and in the parks.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.